Ben, I don't know if you know this. This may be new information to you.
Mm-hmm.
Where we live, Rochester, New York, if anybody's wondering, there's this Facebook page, okay? There's a Facebook page of girls that post men and ask the group, are we dating the same man? It's an Are We Dating the Same Man group.
Okay.
I don't know if you were familiar with this before I brought it up.
I was.
But it's a very popular page in the Rochester area. And I'm laying in bed one day and I get shown a screenshot of you. of Benny H. from New York in this group. Now, I know you're a little promiscuous here and there. That's what? Fine. You're a little promiscuous. You like to have fun. That's fine. You know, you're a grown man and you like to treat women right.
Yeah.
But I know you would never date two girls at the same time. So
correct.
I was pretty, you know, out of it once I was shown this screenshot. I'm like, no fucking way that Ben is getting posted in this group chat. And, you know, to not my surprise, you got raving comments, glowing comments.
Ooh.
Ben's such a great guy. He's a great person. He's a caring person. One of the coolest dudes I've ever met or worked with. It was one of your old coworkers. I forgot her name. But my question to you is, one, do you have any suspects on who did this? Okay. Do you have any girls that maybe thought you were dating somebody else in the past few months? Two, how do you feel about these comments and reviews about your character and your personality? And three, overall, what do you think of the group? And start with that question first. What do you think of the group? Do you think it's insecurity out of women? Do you think it's a good thing for them to, you know, find out how these men are in relationships? I just want to hear your take on it.
Yeah. All right. So I think that the group in it's twofold, right? The group, I think, from a women's perspective, is a good thing. I think that it promotes women's safety. I think there are a lot of scumbag men. And what I've gathered
a ton
from hearing this, there's married guys, right? And they get outed and stuff like that. So, like, I think that's a good thing, right? For women's safety, and especially women who are, like, meeting guys potentially online, on Tinder, on Hinge, like, whatever it may be, to, like, have a grasp on what type of person they're meeting when they're meeting them for the first time. Yep. Makes sense to me. Okay, I get that.
And to put more context for the listeners and viewers, it was Ben's Tinder profile that was pictured. So
yeah,
kind of going off what you say, meeting somebody online, it was your Tinder profile.
Right. So I get that perspective. And I also find it interesting just how many text messages I got about this from different women. To put into perspective the scale of like how many people are in this group, like tons of people hit me up. It wasn't just you. And they're like, hey, you know, you got posted, right? And
I'm well,
like,
was I the first one or was I, or you did you already know about
you? You were the first one. And then over like the next 2 days, like multiple people came up to me and told me, and I'm like, Jesus Christ. Okay. So to the original question, how do I feel about the group? Women's side, I get it. For me, I think it's a huge violation, to be honest with you. I felt like that was a violation of my privacy. I'm not about that, dude. I don't like it. Even though I got the good reviews, and shout out to the women who spoke to my character. I appreciate that. I reached out to my friend who you mentioned and I was like, thank you. That was really sweet of you to say. But at the same time, dude, like, what gives somebody who I'm just starting to talk to the right to broadcast my information that I am even back out in the dating pool? Maybe I'm not actively out in the dating pool. Mm-hmm. Just because I'm talking to you doesn't mean that you should be able to crowdsource information about me from people who know me in my life. You know what I mean? Yeah. And for example, like you asked if I was familiar with this group ahead of time. Yeah, because my ex showed me this group and told me about it. So I know my ex is in this group. Now she knows that I'm back in the dating pool. Who knows what type of toxic situation that is and what you're potentially opening me up to by posting me. Like, I don't appreciate it. Do I have any suspects as to who did it? Well, due to some deep research and something that you pointed out to me, it was an Android screenshot, which, I mean, you know, I'm team Android, but that X's out most of the suspects. I think I know who it was. If I get definitive proof, I'm cutting her off. I swear, that's it.
I mean, that is
posting
fair.
is cut off worthy.
I agree wholeheartedly. I could see both sides for sure. Like on the girl's perspective, it's safety. You want to know who you're dealing with. especially in an age where there are a lot of scummy guys, to be quite honest, and there's a lot of assholes and a lot of cheaters out there, or whatever the case may be. And I can understand it from that perspective, but from a guy's perspective, I think it is a huge violation of just trust and a huge violation of your privacy. And it just reeks of insecurity to me. That's the biggest thing. You know, I don't really care. I'll say it. Like, if you got to post a man you're talking to or seeing, you probably either one shouldn't be in the dating pool,
yep,
or two, you shouldn't be talking to this man.
Yep.
That's literally quite simple. Obviously, you got good reviews, and the girl probably was like, oh, you know, that's good to hear, and probably would have been interested in dating you, but now you found out about it. Obviously, you're going to find out about it, as most of the dudes probably will, and now it's just a complete turnoff.
Exactly.
So it just reeks of insecurity. It reeks of, like, just to me at least, that you have some sort of relationship issue or relationship trauma that you need to work through as a person. And obviously 99% of people won't work through their trauma and whatnot, but that's what it looks like to me as an outsider. But
yeah, and the last thing I'll say about this is that I also think that, what are the chances you're getting an accurate description of the person, especially if, like, okay, it's, so I had female friends, right? Like, I had female friends who reached out, but, like, even though they said positive things about me, that doesn't really logistically speak to, like, who I am in a relationship. That's a totally different type of dynamic, my platonic female friends and my exes. And then if, say, my exes reach out, how many exes are going to come and say to you that nice things about you to try and help you with your next relationship and make you happy with another person, dude? Like, what? Are we delusional?
He did this. He did that. Blah, blah, blah. But they won't take self-accountability for what they did.
Absolutely
in the relationship.
So,
yeah, dude. it just reeks of bias.
It's chalked. Fully chalked, dude.
Obviously, people just love a community. People love to be a part of something, and in a woman-only group, you know, they think they're doing God's work by rooting out all of these evil men. There are still some other factors at play that I don't agree with, personally. But, you know, more power to them. They could do whatever they want, and if it helps a girl avoid a bad relationship, I guess that's all that matters to them.
Fair enough. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another off-season edition of the Dose Media Network podcast. I'm Ben Hover, joined as I always am by Joey Carrion. And on today's show, we've got NFL news to talk about. Joey, a lot has happened since the last time we record. The draft is a week away, and we're going to talk about everything that is going on. Lots of interesting stories filtering out of the NFL right now, and let's get into it.
Yeah, there's a ton of news, a ton of moving parts right now. The NFL draft is about a week away now, next Thursday. We're recording this on Friday afternoon, so less than a week away. And the first major piece of news that has happened over the last week is Allen Robinson was traded from the Los Angeles Rams to the Pittsburgh Steelers. So how do you feel about this trade? Do you think it impacts his fantasy value? You know, he's like a fucking 18th round pick right now. Are you staying away? Are you buying? And does this affect George Pickens, Deontay Johnson, etc.?
I don't really love this move. I would be staying away from fantasy. Like, here's the thing with Allen Robinson. He's going to turn 30 years old before the season starts. He hasn't been productive in 2 years. And the situation to me is not one that makes me want to jump on and try and get on a bounce back. Like, I don't believe Kenny Pickett is him, first and foremost. And even if I'm wrong, right, and Kenny Pickett is him, Deontay Johnson, George Pickens, Pat Freiermuth, Najee Harris, there are a lot of mouths to feed in this offense. I don't see Allen Robinson just coming in and suddenly commanding a large target share there. I don't really know where he fits into that offense, like what his role is, right? Deontay and George Pickens seem to already have defined roles. I don't know. This doesn't seem like a great fit to me. Maybe it's a slight boost, if anything, for Kenny Pickett because he is another weapon, but I don't see too much standalone value there for Allen Robinson. Like, it's probably tent time for Allen Robinson, no?
No, I totally agree. I think this is honestly probably a worse move for his fantasy value, just with the pieces that the Steelers have on offense and then the downgrade in quarterback play. Like, Kenny Pickett was not that great of a quarterback in 2022. And honestly, I don't see him, you know, progressing into an even above average starting quarterback in the NFL. I think he is what he is, and he's not going to be able to support multiple fantasy assets. He wasn't even really able to support one in 2022. Mm-hmm. So don't really care for this move. I'm not in on Allen Robinson in fantasy football this year either way, whether he was on the Rams or not, but definitely staying away from A-Rob now. But another news that we should have brought up first, which is on me, your boy.
Oh, my God.
The young Tyreek Hill, as you proclaim, got suspended for 6 games for gambling. Okay, so we have another gambling suspension. There was actually 5 handed out, a couple year longs to your man's Quintez Cephas. Mm-hmm. But Jameson Williams is the notable player of the 5 to get suspended 6 games into his sophomore year. So he won't be back until week 7. How do you feel about him getting suspended for gambling?
I mean, what the hell, dude? What the hell? The Lions are so set up. Why would you do this? Why would you do this, dude? He was gambling on apparently a college football game within the facility. Use your fucking brain, dude. Like, did we not learn from Calvin Ridley at all? I'm upset by this move. I was bullish on Jameson Williams. I thought that he was going to come in and be an immediate impact in the Lions offense this year. And it's just like a boneheaded move where he clearly wasn't thinking things through. And it just, I don't like it. I don't like it. And there's already been concerns and like people voicing their thoughts about whether or not he's all in Detroit as a whole. And this doesn't really speak well to that mindset.
True. I mean, it definitely kind of reeks of immaturity.
Yes.
In my opinion, especially after seeing what happened to Calvin Ridley. And I get the other side too for bringing up, you know, the devil's advocate argument is the NFL promotes gambling the most out of any major league sport now. They say that players can gamble, and he wasn't gambling on NFL games, so that's why he only got a 6-game suspension. So I can understand that, and it was really based off of technicality, like you can't gamble at certain NFL locations. That just seems stupid, but you just have to be more mature. You have to be smarter, and you have to just not bet wherever the NFL is associated. You know, whether you're at the facility, just wait till you get home. Do it in the comfort of your own home. I wouldn't even bet on football.
I didn't even know that. Like, I thought there was just a blanket rule that,
I mean,
you
it seems stupid. It's stupid for sure. Just this whole location bullshit. So that obviously sucks for Jameson Williams, and I definitely think it impacts this season for him. You know, he missed most of his rookie year with a torn ACL and rehabbing from that. Now he's going to miss 6 games. Due to a gambling suspension. I think in terms of fantasy football, not too sure about what his ADP was prior, but it's probably going to be, 8th to 10th round, somewhere in that range with the suspension in mind. And he's still obviously a good best ball player with the ceiling and upside that he possesses on a singular game basis. But I don't know if I'd be in on him, to be honest, with the suspension. And I just think it could derail another season of his, to be honest.
Yeah, and it's tough once you start getting into being like not on the field for a decent bit of your first 2 years in the league. Like, that's really not where you want to be. Yeah, that can be the beginning of the downfall.
Yeah, because just getting the experience, whether you're good or bad, is so beneficial to like your career early on, right? Like, we saw it with Justin Jefferson. Like, he didn't play the first 2 games, but he comes in his rookie year. And he just gets the game experience, and now he's one of the best receivers in the NFL, if not the best. Maybe not that great of an example, but you need to be on the field.
J-Mo, wide receiver 28 right now on Underdog ADP 79.8. I think that's prior to decline, obviously. Yeah. That'll continue to drop, but like, it needs to drop a lot at this point, I think.
Yeah. Totally agree.
All right. In other wide receiver news, Odell Beckham Jr. has found a home. He is now a Baltimore Raven on a 1-year, $15 million deal. And tell me if I'm wilding here, because the way that I've been thinking about this is that there's a lot of parallels to Odell Beckham and Allen Robinson at this point in their careers, right? They're the same draft class, same age. Odell's actually older. Odell's already 30, and they've had similar career arcs, not the same. Obviously, Odell's peaks were much higher. Odell as a talent, I think we probably agree, is significantly better than Allen Robinson, but we're looking at players towards the end of their, you know, primes, if not past their primes. We're looking at players who haven't been what we look at them to be in terms of their ceiling in several seasons. I mean, Odell Beckham was reportedly, like, he said he didn't even have an ACL. Like, he was playing with no, I mean, stop the cap, but, like, obviously he's been suffering multiple injuries throughout his career. I don't know. I mean, it's a better landing spot than Allen Robinson. There's way less competition for targets in Baltimore, but just in general, it's like, are we buying into a 30-year-old Odell Beckham at this point in his career?
Probably not at this point. I am a little biased because I am an OBJ stan, and I always have been.
Yeah.
And I think if injuries weren't a factor with Odell, he would have been a Hall of Famer. Like, the talent was top five in the league, as we saw for multiple years early on in his career, and then injuries have obviously derailed his career to this point. But he played with the Rams in 2020, had a productive season. He was good. He showed that he could still be a capable player. And 30 is older, and it probably is a little past his prime. But if healthy, I think he could still be somewhat productive. Maybe not an elite fantasy wide receiver one as, like, we attach to his name, but probably like a solid wide receiver three, wide receiver four. We'll get you 10 to 12 points per game. Obviously, right now you're more concerned with whether or not Lamar Jackson is going to be the starting quarterback for the Ravens. It looks like that's the most likeliest outcome, is him returning to Baltimore and then maybe them going after, you know, DeAndre Hopkins or another wide receiver in free agency. But right now I don't mind OBJ. I think he can still be productive, but injuries are a concern, and his injury history is obviously a huge red flag at this point. But he may have a little bit juice left in the tank just because, you know, he hasn't played. You'd have to see how well he moves after all of these surgeries that he's had over the last few years.
Yeah, see, like, I don't look at it like him being injury prone, like he's more likely to get hurt, but you look at it like, have the injuries stacked up to the point that he can't fully recover, right? So that's obviously one
factor. I think
we
just don't know.
We definitely don't know. And then the other factor is, like you said, Lamar Jackson, because that's totally going to dictate the level of interest we have. If it's Tyler Huntley or something like that in Baltimore, no chance, right?
No chance.
So the story came out that apparently Lamar Jackson said to the Ravens, get me OBJ, get me DeAndre Hopkins, and then we can continue to talk about things. So they said, like, we don't have the money for both. They got Odell. I don't know what is going on here. This whole Lamar Jackson saga it's getting to, like, the Aaron Rodgers level of annoyance for me. Like, can we just get this done, especially after the Jalen Hurts deal? And there was a report that Lamar Jackson turned down more money than Jalen Hurts got, which would be absurd. Like, if I'm Lamar Jackson and I get offered that Jalen Hurts contract, smash accept. Yeah. You're not going to get anything better than that, frankly, or at least you should be willing to take that.
And like you said, he got a little bit more. He got $200 million.
Yes.
Offered, guaranteed, reportedly. Obviously, we do not know. But if he got offered $200 million, he's an idiot for not accepting.
Yes.
Jalen Hurts on a per year basis right now is like the highest paid quarterback ever. So that means Lamar's contract would be a little bit better than that. So I don't know how you can be mad about getting top five money ever at the quarterback position, especially since you really only have one elite year under your belt and no playoff success at all. Obviously, I personally contribute a lot of that to just the Ravens not giving him a bunch of talent, which is why he's demanding go out and get these players and get him talent. And then you have Rashad Bateman coming off Liz Frank surgery this year. Who knows how well he's going to be recovered for the season. And then you still got Mark Andrews. So they got some players. They just need to focus on Lamar coming back. But I do agree that I'm sick of it. Either sign or go somewhere else.
Right.
But it looks like he has no market.
Yeah. I think all those dreams I had of him going to Detroit, I think it's chalked, unfortunately.
Yeah. I think they're comfortable rolling with Goff at this point.
Unfortunately. So DeAndre Hopkins, I mean, I don't think that Baltimore gets him, to be honest. Did you see the body language video that was circulating across Twitter?
I did see that. Like,
did you see his expression when the guy said New England Patriots?
Yeah. Like, fuck you, buddy. But A lot of people don't know. I don't know if you remember, but DeAndre Hopkins did block my old Twitter.
Really? I didn't know
that.
I was
blocked by DeAndre Hopkins for talking shit about him back in like 2012.
Did you earn it? You earned that block?
I think I definitely earned that block. Obviously, I don't talk shit anymore, and I hardly ever did back then, but for some reason, I had a little bit of a vendetta against DeAndre Hopkins, and I would tag him on Twitter and tell him how bad he is at football and that he sucks. And so he blocked me.
Dang, that's funny. I don't think I've ever gotten blocked by a professional athlete before. I mean, I don't tweet at them except for like I definitely tweeted at Nick Chubb that one time. But other than that, shout out Nick Chubb, douchebag. But anyways, yeah. So DeAndre Hopkins, I don't even remember like who the guy interviewing him was, but he basically was like, "Here's a couple of teams. Don't say anything. Just react with your body language in terms of them being good landing spots." He shrugged off the Pats. He shrugged off the Jets and seemed to express interest in the Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs, which is interesting, right? And there's been a lot of buzz about him to Buffalo. That could be an incredible spot, right? Steph Diggs, DeAndre Hopkins, a little bit of Shakir slash potentially Gabe Davis if he remains with the team, Dawson Knox. The Bills are trying to get some more support around Josh Allen. Obviously, the Gabe Davis stuff, you know, he's had flashes, but I just don't think that they're satisfied with the production he's given them. And I think DeAndre Hopkins would be a phenomenal addition to Buffalo with Josh Allen supposedly the most focused on football he's ever been. That's what he said, at least.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Interesting timing on that, huh?
Yeah, so with DeAndre Hopkins, I think he would be a pretty good addition to that Bills offense, give Josh Allen another high-profile wide receiver. Gabe Davis at this point is a boom or bust wide receiver three from a fantasy perspective, and I do agree that they probably aren't satisfied with him and the depth at wide receiver behind Diggs. So going out and getting Hopkins would be a very good move. And I do think we see these trades kind of come to fruition if they were to happen, because the draft happens in 6 days and teams are going to want picks. So I think the Aaron Rodgers trade should go down in this next week. Maybe potentially a DeAndre Hopkins trade, maybe a Lamar Jackson, you know, blockbuster deal with another team or something like that. But yeah,
the AJ Brown trade happened on draft night, right? I definitely see that being a Hopkins situation as well.
And then with Josh Allen,
you were right.
I was going to say that they said that reportedly they're focused on kind of running him less, and we talked about that on one of our last offseason podcasts where, you know, I predicted that they would probably stop trying to run Josh Allen as much. Like, you just can't keep on doing that. But obviously, in playoff games, they're still going to use his legs, and he's probably still going to put his body on the line. And, you know, you said he's more focused on football than ever, and I wonder why that is. Do you know why that is?
I've heard rumblings.
So, you know, Buffalo, New York, maybe, shit, you might have even known. You might even know this woman. But for anybody not familiar with the story, Josh Allen, he should have been posted on the Buffalo on the Buffalo Facebook page, because this dude was out here doing some scummy shit.
He's wilding out. I can't believe the rumor. Dude, Josh is he seems like such a good guy, and I guess that's why you need these groups. That's
why you need the Facebook dating groups. Are we dating the same man? Because the rumor is Josh Allen and his fiance or girlfriend or whatever split because he slept with a Buffalo bartender and ended up getting her pregnant. I don't know if I believe that. Obviously, couples split every single day, all the time, for numerous reasons. Now, did he cheat? Maybe. Probably, to be honest. They're football players. They can get whatever the fuck they want. They can get any girl that they want. All it takes is the girl knowing who they are. So it probably happened.
Josh Allen is the Jesus Christ of Buffalo, dude.
Yeah.
He walks around and panties drop to the floor.
Yeah, exactly. So would I be surprised if this rumor was true? No, I wouldn't be surprised one bit. Do I think the rumor is true? Probably not. I think they probably just broke up and now he could focus on football and he doesn't have to worry about, you know, dealing with a relationship. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. I mean, we saw Tom Brady. Giselle divorced his ass and he became fucking Gardner Minshew. So.
Damn. That's crazy. That's crazy. I don't know, man. I mean, first of all, I know some of the bartenders in Buffalo. I could see it. I could see it. I could see making that decision, especially what's bars open until 4 a.m. I mean, I'm too poor to go to the bars that Josh Allen goes to, so I don't even know. That's why I'm saying it's like we wouldn't be in the same circle, so I don't know.
I don't know. I did see like him. Somebody did take a picture of him at like a bar, and it looked like a pretty high-end upscale restaurant slash bar.
And the quality of bartenders escalates as the quality of the surroundings escalates in multiple ways. So is it possible? Absolutely. Is it probable? You said you don't believe it. I think it's definitely true. I think it 100% happened. The question is, you know, how does it get handled in post? How does the post-production of this go? Does this child come into the world? Yes or no? Topic for another time. No. You would think no, right? I mean, he did say he's the most focused on football. If he had a secret baby coming, then that would not be optimal, I think, for his projections in 2023.
Yes.
You definitely have to manually input the secret baby doc and take some of those points off.
You don't get this insight on any other podcast. I will say that. How does Josh Allen's personal life affect his on-the-field performance? To be determined.
I would take him as the QB, too. He's going as QB1 on Underdog. I would take Mahomes over him. Mahomes, as annoying and like cloudy as his wife, fiance, whatever she is, at least they're solid, you know? Yeah. They're solid. It is what it is. Give me Mahomes QB1 in fantasy right now. In other NFL news, Joey, it looks like we have a couple of running backs, and we touched on this a few weeks ago, but the steam is continuing to grow around both Joe Mixon and Dalvin Cook becoming cut candidates. Joe Mixon dealing with some issues with the authorities, which seems to it stopped and then it restarted. I don't even fully know what's going on with Joe Mixon. Dalvin Cook seems to be more of a cap casualty other than anything. Like, they want him to take a pay cut, as do the Bengals with Joe Mixon, which makes sense because Joe Mixon was barely better than Samaje Perine last year. Like, the fact of the matter is, I think both of these guys are sort of on the tail end of their careers. They could still be productive in the right spots, but they seem to not be, you know, the top tier running backs that they may have been 2 years ago. And I think the teams view them that way. And I would not be surprised to see either of them be cut in the coming weeks and months.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think this is a pretty good transition to our NFL draft talk. Okay. Yeah. A lot is going to change in the fantasy landscape with the NFL draft coming up in less than a week. You mentioned Dalvin Cook, Joe Mixon as potential cut candidates. You have Ezekiel Elliott and Leonard Fournette still on the market. And then you have a bunch of rookies coming in to either boost or destroy some fantasy values. Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll start off with probably the most impactful fantasy football player as a rookie coming out, and that's Bijan Robinson. Now, I will preface this by saying Ben and I are not college scout evaluators.
No. We
talk about fantasy football and the fantasy football landscape and, you know, potential landing spots and whatever.
Right. Bijan, I'm an expert on diagnosing how Josh Allen cheating on his girlfriend will impact his fantasy value, not a talent scout for college. Yeah.
But we are going to discuss these rookies coming in, potential landing spots, and how it's going to impact teams and even the free agent market. So Bijan Robinson, generational running back prospect by all accounts, by anybody that you follow on Twitter that, you know, does college football scouting and film analysis, whatever. He's being drafted as a top five running back in fantasy football, if you did not know that. Mm-hmm. In best ball, I should say.
Right.
And obviously in rookie drafts, he's the clear cut 101. You know, you're not taking anybody else above him. What landing spots do you think would be the best? What landing spots do you think would be the worst for Bijan? And ultimately, are you in on him at this round one, round two ADP in best ball? Like,
it's so hard to say right now because we don't know where he's going to go. But it's also, he seems to just be most likely landing spot proof, right? He's going to come in and he's going to get a ton of work wherever he goes. There's no questions about his talent. There's no questions about his role. I think that wherever he goes, he's an instantaneous three down back. And I'm not mad at the draft position. I'm really not. I think that it's fair for him. And we've seen this in years past too. When guys are this much of a slam dunk prospect, they go this highly in drafts, and they've tended to work out in the past. Like early career Zeke Elliott, early career Saquon comes to mind. And I think that Bijan is in that mold, in that tier of a prospect. So I'd be willing to take the shot from a fantasy perspective. In terms of landing spot, like, I've seen Texans tossed around as a potential spot with their second first round pick, pick 12. I think that's possible. I've seen the Eagles get mocked quite a bit, which, I mean, I think that they're okay right now with Penny and Gainwell, but at the same time, they are a team with enough depth that they could make a luxury pick like running back in the first round. They also do have two first round picks, which is, you know, a little bit surprising for a team coming off of a Super Bowl run. That would be obviously an elite landing spot. You go to an offense that's that loaded, that's that efficient, I think would make a ton of sense. The main thing with Bijan to me is that, you know, fan bases like Buffalo, fan bases like Dallas, who think that Bijan is in their range, he's not, okay? He's not making it that deep into round one. I think he's a top 10 pick, you know, when it's all said and done. And I think that one of the biggest edges, we can't bet this in New York, we can't bet on draft props, shout out to New York, but I think one of the best draft props available on markets where you can is over 1.5 running backs selected in the first round at plus 250. I've seen, especially over the past couple of days, multiple mock drafts from multiple different sources that have Jahmyr Gibbs going as a first round pick now, even inside the top 20 in some spots. Bijan, especially when he gets taken earlier than maybe some people are expecting, I think some of these other teams will end up going and looking at Gibbs with that first round pick.
Yep, I definitely like that bet. Like you said, we can't bet it, unfortunately, because we're in one of the worst states possible in New York. But I do agree that two running backs could definitely be selected. Do I agree that a running back should be taken in the first round? Absolutely not, just because they are super replaceable. But you did mention that young rookie running backs that are considered like generational prospects do tend to work out quite a bit. And I do think that Bijan's bust potential is super low. Mm-hmm. So I can get on board with drafting Bijan round one. Now, do I have any clue as to where he's going to go? No, I personally don't believe he's a top 10 pick. I do think he'll probably fall to the back 16 of the draft, and then some contenders there would be the Chargers at 21, could be a potential spot, the Vikings at 23 if they were to cut Dalvin Cook, Cowboys at 26, Bills at 27, and Eagles at 30. I think those are all potential landing spots for Bijan Robinson, but I think at this point nobody really knows where he's going to go. But as just a pure outsider that has listened to a lot of offseason podcasts and rookie talk for some reason this year, Bijan is worth a first round pick, and I do think that he gets drafted pretty highly. So
yeah, and I mean, it's also that mid tier of the first round, I think, is live as well. Commanders, Lions with their second first round pick, the Bucks with Fournette gone and only really Rashad White there. I don't know. I just don't see him making it deep into the first round because he's just such a rock solid talent, right? Like the yeah. like you said, the bust potential is so low. Somebody is going to take him, and he'll pay off, right? Like
yeah.
like we even said with Zeke, like in retrospect, the pick was good. It was the extension that was bad. Like yeah. you can make these picks for these guys. It's just when you end up overpaying them at a replaceable position is when you falter. But if you're a team that's built for success immediately, it can make sense to introduce an elite talent at a low price point into your offense like Bijan Robinson. Like he's not yeah. going to bust.
Yeah, totally agree. I think personally, the highest he goes is 12 to Houston. And then I could mm-hmm. see a bunch of teams after that taking him. I could see the Patriots potentially taking him at 14, and then all of the teams that, you know, I mentioned and that you mentioned, the Lions at 18, etc. Jahmyr Gibbs is the consensus RB2. I've never seen this dude play, so don't know how good he is. But like you said, you have seen and heard people, you know, kind of hyping up the Jahmyr Gibbs in round one talk. I've heard that too on the podcast that I've listened to, that he could potentially sneak into round one. And I do like the bet at plus 250. But if I had to take a guess right now, I think he's probably an early round two pick at this point. I think Bijan is really the only running back that is going to go in round one of the NFL draft, but the fifth year option is obviously very valuable. So maybe a team will take Gibbs late in the first round. You know, there are some teams that I mentioned, like the Bills and the Eagles and the Cowboys, that could potentially go that route. And then you get 5 years of a rookie running back that by all accounts is, you know, very good. So I like that option with Gibbs. And then the other two running backs that we can mention here that could be fantasy relevant is Zach Charbonnet out of UCLA. And then there's a couple of other running backs behind him that have some, you know, steam. Tank Bigsby plays for Auburn. Sean Tucker plays for Syracuse. Never even heard of these guys until today. Never watched any film on them, so I don't know. I have heard of Zach Charbonnet, and I know some analysts are pretty high on him.
Really bullish on him from what I've read.
And he could be a day two pick, but it seems like there's a clear-cut consensus top three, and I think those are really the only three running backs that are going to matter in fantasy drafts.
And to, like, the fantasy football perspective of things, and this is the case year in and year out, just with the position, so much of it is just completely dependent on landing spot. Like, talent is not the number one priority at the running back position. It's opportunity. So I don't know, there's not much in my opinion to discuss at this point. This entire conversation will change in a week from now, you know. So we'll revisit this next week after we cover post draft stuff. And, you know, because like Gibbs right now, it consensus number two running back. If he goes to a bad spot and Charbonnet goes to a great spot, well, then the rankings flip instantaneously, because that matters more than talent.
Yep, absolutely.
Quarterback. Let's talk quarterback here. Okay, because over the past few days, things have really shifted, like from an odds perspective, where Bryce Young now is minus 2,000 to go 101. Whereas a few weeks ago, it seemed like it could have been any of them. It could have been Bryce. It could have been Stroud. It could have been even Richardson as an outside shot. But it looks like somebody got the info. I think Carolina's locking Bryce Young at 101. Do you think that that is as good as done? Because it seems like that's the way that the market has moved.
Yeah, a few weeks ago, it seemed like Stroud was the overwhelming, you know, favorite, and honestly a lock to go to Carolina. There was obviously the reports that he met with Josh McCown and the Panthers, and they said, like, you know, once you're here, blah, blah, something about playing basketball or whatever. But that has changed. Bryce Young is now the number one favorite to go number one overall, and I agree with that. I did watch a little bit of Bryce Young just because he plays at Alabama. They play in a lot of big games, and he was a very good quarterback. He won a Heisman Trophy, and he's just the most polished quarterback coming out of this class. So I think the Panthers taking him at number one is the correct decision, and I think that's pretty much set in stone. It's a lock. The conversation, especially for fantasy purposes, really comes in to with where the next three quarterbacks are going to go and where they go, because obviously draft capital matters. There is a ton of smoke around the Texans not taking a quarterback at two. Mm-hmm. There's smoke around them trading out. And now there's a lot of CJ Stroud like hate out there. I don't know if you've seen the whole S2 score testing, whatever it is, but he apparently tested really low on that, and that's kind of like a IQ test, decision making ability to read and process information. And apparently he scored really low on that, and that is definitely a red flag. I'd be concerned, because as a quarterback, that's probably what you need. Number one is your ability to process information at a quick speed. So I'm not too sure of where he's gonna go now if Houston doesn't take him. Apparently the Colts are higher on Levis over Richardson and Stroud, and the Colts are at four. I don't think Arizona's going to draft a quarterback. I don't think Seattle's going to draft a quarterback. I don't think Detroit's going to draft a quarterback. And obviously we'll get some trades throughout the top 10. But I guess my question is, how many quarterbacks do you see going in the top 10? Do you think a team's going to trade up to draft like an Anthony Richardson? Do you think Stroud's going to fall based on this news, you know, just on your hunch, on your gut, whatever? And like, what's the fantasy impact with these three quarterbacks behind Bryce Young?
Again, so much of this obviously is going to depend on where they land. I think that I won't say top 10. I'll say all four of these guys are going to go in the top 12, though, because if Houston, for some reason, doesn't utilize that pick at number two, I think that they're very live to trade back up and get the guy that they do want. If Stroud falls somehow all the way to like 12, I don't think that they pass up on him twice. Because it's such a bold and obvious need for the team. And then you have like sleeper teams like Atlanta. I mean, Could they just run with Desmond Ridder? Absolutely. But if CJ Stroud, a guy who like 3 weeks ago was widely considered to be the 101 in the class, falls to 8, you think Atlanta's not going to take him? Like, I mean, I personally would in their shoes. The Tennessee Titans are live, a sleeper at 11 as well, with Malik Willis looking extremely disappointing last year. Ryan Tannehill, that seems to sort of be at the tail end. I don't think that they have too much invested in him at this point. So I think that some of these teams, Falcons, are live for it. I think the Colts, there's so much smoke around them and Levis that seems like it might be a done deal, right? I don't know. Like, I feel more confident in that than where I think like Stroud or Anthony Richardson goes. Anthony Richardson to Detroit. I'm starting to be on this bandwagon, dude. They seem, like you said, very clear in terms of being good with Goff. And AR-15 is a guy who like could very well much benefit from having a year to sit behind an established starter. It seems like a phenomenal landing spot. Honestly, both Detroit and Seattle seem like really good landing spots for AR-15 because they can roll with Geno. They can roll with Goff for this year and let him develop. And he's got such a high upside. Like everything you read about him is that he's boom or bust. And these teams with good, solid starters maybe lack a ceiling, I think should be jumping at the opportunity to get Anthony Richardson on their team. So as a Lions fan, I would love if they made that pick. There's all these reports coming out about how like Goff hasn't been approached at all about contract extensions. There was a story a few months ago about how their GM Brad Holmes said that, you know, they are interested and they'll explore quarterbacks in the draft. Like, I think that there's some subtle smoke around this happening, and I wouldn't be surprised at all to see the Lions take a shot on AR-15 or even CJ Stroud if he does somehow fall because of all of this, you know, recent news that you brought up.
Yeah, and I think making like a bet of Anthony Richardson to Detroit, I don't have the odds on that, but I would make that bet 100%. I could see the Lions going the quarterback route for sure, and Levis and Richardson are kind of in the same tier. They're unpolished guys with a proverbial elite ceiling. You know, Levis has a crazy strong arm. He's a bigger quarterback. He has all the tools that you want in a franchise quarterback. It's just his accuracy, you know, according to scouts and talent evaluators, was just god awful. And there is some concerns about like his age. He's like 24 years old, and so there are red flags.
Yeah, red flags. He puts mayonnaise in his
coffee. I was gonna bring that up.
Send his ass to prison. Get out of the draft board.
He
dog.
Puts mayo in his coffee, and then there's another outlandish thing that he does that I saw, and I don't remember what it was, but there's two things that he does that immediately he would be off my draft board if I was a GM. Like, who in their right mind is putting fucking mayonnaise in their fucking coffee, my guy? What are you doing?
Why would you even think to do that in the first place? And then not only that, but like
that's
you do
literally
it and you're like,
white
this
people
is gonna
shit.
Be my dog. I know,
like as white people, that is white people shit. What are you doing? You're off the draft board at that
that's
point.
That's psychosis is what that is. Get help. You know the meme. Get some help. Stop yeah. it. Get some help. Like, please, dude. What is wrong with you?
Yeah.
I'd be appalled if the Lions took him.
But yeah, I think it's pretty much a lock that those four guys go top 10, top 15 max. And at this point, if you can bet draft props, I think the better bets would be making player to team bets. So
yeah.
Richardson to the Lions, Levis to the Colts is probably a favorite if I had to guess. You know, maybe you could go Richardson to Seattle, probably longer shot there. If CJ Stroud falls, you could do CJ Stroud to Atlanta or something like that at 8. And I will mention, you know, going back to the S2 scores, Levis did finish in the 96th percentile, or he had a 96% score. So he was up there with Bryce Young in terms of like his ability to process information, which is a good sign. And CJ Stroud was abnormally low. He was at 18%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's hard to know like exactly how much to put into something like that. But you and I talk so much about how, especially at the quarterback position, it's so mental that it's more
mental.
It is worth considering, I think, for sure.
Yeah,
we'll see. And then I guess the last question with quarterbacks I'll ask is, what do you think about there being a fifth quarterback selected? It would be Hendon Hooker, if anything. Do you think that that is possible as a first round pick? Right now, it would be plus 350 to take a draft prop for more than 4.5 quarterbacks selected. So it would probably be a scenario where somebody's trading back up to the back end of the first round to get that fifth year option on a quarterback like Hooker.
Yeah, that's what I was going to mention is that'd be the only reason to take Hooker in the first round to get that extra year on his option, especially if he's a quarterback that, you know, you can't start right away, right? If you sit him for a year and you take him in the second round, and then his second year is pretty much his rookie year, then you only have two more years after that. It's a very short window for a potential, you know, starting quarterback in the NFL to do well and perform. So I think a team trading up in the back end of the first round for Hooker is definitely possible. And at that price, I would definitely bet the over 4.5 quarterbacks taken in the first round. But he's probably a round two quarterback in terms of the range of outcomes, most likely going round two.
Yeah, he's outside of like Daniel Jeremiah's top 50 draft prospects. So it would definitely be a contract driven reach if somebody did want to go and get him just for those reasons that we mentioned. We can close out here with the wide receiver position. And this, it's interesting because I feel like typically over the past few years, there's been a clear cut standout wide receiver one that we've all known is like, he's the guy this year. It doesn't really seem to be the case this year. There are a ton of wide receivers with very tight odds in terms of who will be the first wide receiver selected. And it just sort of seems to be that this draft class of wide receivers, is it just me or does it seem like none of these guys are a clear-cut standout alpha? Like, it's a deep class and these are going to be productive wide receivers potentially, but I don't know that we're going to get one of those, you know, Justin Jeffersons, those Jamar Chases out of this class necessarily. It doesn't seem to be one of those years.
Yeah, definitely not. I mean, I think there's, you know, a main four that are getting smoke of being a first round prospect. You have JSN out of Ohio State, who is, in my opinion, probably the most likeliest wide receiver to get drafted first.
He's then you the have, favorite.
Yeah. Then you have Quentin Johnson, Zay Flowers, and Jordan Addison, I think are the top four that we should that we're going to focus on.
A lot of Jalen Hyatt talk too. He's the fifth one that's like recently sort of sneaked into that conversation.
Yeah, and it's just hard, obviously, because we don't watch these guys and we don't really know. And I think that is a big part. But just in terms of fantasy, I'm not seeing like too many landing spots that would be exciting, like in the middle of the first round, because that's where the wide receivers would start getting drafted. As a Patriots fan, obviously I want them to draft a wide receiver, and I would love for it to be JSN at pick 14. But by all accounts, this wide receiver class is not great. And like you said, doesn't have the high end talent. And so I don't know if it'd be worth it for New England to take JSN there. But other than that, honestly, like looking at the draft order, I guess there's not much. Maybe Detroit now with the Jameson Williams news that he's going to be out for 6 games. They could go wide receiver at 18. The Chargers are in play for a wide receiver at 21. That'd be interesting. Other than that, I don't know what team I would be excited for these wide receivers to go to.
Chargers is definitely interesting. Obviously, that's strong because you're going to be attached to Justin Herbert off the rip, which is huge. Mm-hmm. I've seen them get mocked Quentin Johnson a lot, and it's funny because it seems like his biggest comparison is Mike Williams, right?
Yeah,
like he's a big guy who makes great contested catches, but he's also inconsistent, which is like Mike Williams to a T. So I don't know that they necessarily need that, but if I were them, especially in this draft class where a lot of these guys are smaller, some of them profile as slot receivers, I feel like the Chargers, if anything, should probably go that direction and be planning for the fall off of Keenan Allen, which we started to see show itself last year, even though he was productive. The fall off and the evidence of that coming was definitely clear. Some of the other teams that I think should be and probably are interested in landing first round wide receivers would be the Baltimore Ravens, especially if they aren't able, like they likely seem to be, aren't able to get DeAndre Hopkins, right? Mm-hmm. They need more than Odell Beckham, age 30, and Rashad Bateman coming off of Lisfranc. So that's a spot. And then right behind them at 23, the Minnesota Vikings, right? Thielen is gone. Obviously, they're locked and loaded with Justin Jefferson, but are they going to go into the season with KJ Osborne as their clear-cut number two? Like, I like Osborne personally, but is that enough for them? I'm not sure that it is. So, like, I think that would be a pretty good situation to go into, especially if you are one of these wide receivers and they don't need you to be the stone alpha of the offense you go into because you've already got JJ with that role locked and loaded.
No, I definitely think that Minnesota is very in play for a wide receiver at pick 23. Not sure which wide receiver they'd go with. JSN will probably be off the board at that point, but I think they'd have their choice of Quentin Johnson, Zay Flowers, and Jordan Addison at that point. And yeah, I'm not too sure which one they'd go with, but they're definitely in play. I think the Chargers are in play. I think the Patriots are definitely in play for a wide receiver at 14. And
they need like an outside linebacker from Rutgers.
Yeah. So stupid. But yeah, definitely just overall a weak skill position class. There's some good talent at the running back position, but it falls off pretty quick. The wide receivers aren't that great. The tight ends are whatever. We don't really have to talk about them. I mean, there's two that could go in the first round, Michael Mayer and Dalton Kincaid. I think drafting a tight end in round one is fucking ridiculous. I don't care who you are. To be honest, as we see with Kyle Pitts. So we don't really have to talk about them. I don't think either of those guys are going to be factors in their rookie years. But all in all, a very underwhelming draft class.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Obviously, the quarterbacks will be the main story, and we'll see how that goes. I'm just excited, dude. I'm excited for a shakeup. This is going to be a massive shakeup in terms of the league, and it'll finally change the conversation, dude. I'm so sick of the same conversations over and over and over again. We'll finally get a nice juicy reset just in time for BBM4 to drop, which
yeah, this is when best ball season begins.
And I'm excited for it. I see Underdog tweeted out yesterday, like a BBM4 GIF with like four trophies. I think they're probably waiting until next week to drop it, but that'll be peak hype, and that's when we can really start getting into some of these ADP conversations that we haven't been able to yet.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, more fantasy football, best ball content incoming. And like you said, we're about to get a good shakeup here in under a week, but good conversation. Definitely we can go more in depth after we know where these rookies are headed and maybe some other veterans sighing as well. And there's definitely going to be some trades that are going to shake up the fantasy landscape as well. But definitely looking forward to it. Just unfortunate that we live in a state where they think it is a predetermined outcome, and they just think the juice is probably not worth the squeeze. You can get inside information. I will agree with that. You can get inside information of what a team is going to do. So I can agree with why New York doesn't have it, but still complain that we don't have it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't care. I still want to be able to do it. Yeah, of course they're right. A ton of people have inside information. There's so many people out there who already know exactly what their team is going to do, right? I just wish that we could bet on it.
maybe one day. I mean, still got Prize Picks.
Prize Picks has been popping lately. I saw you tweet about it a decent bit in terms of this $1 million promo they're running and the absolute sell fest that people have been firing off these slips with.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we got big into Prize Picks for football season, and we're going to go even harder this NFL season, so I'm excited for that. Took a break from Prize Picks like in March, had a losing month in March, started playing up again a little bit this month, been a profitable month, hit a couple slips, and you know, we have the NHL playoffs, NBA playoffs going on right now, and Prize Picks is doing the $1 million promotional entry. You know, you randomly put in an entry, a random number is assigned, whoever has that number for the entry wins the promo entry. And today was selected at 11:21, and I put in a slip at 11:23. So that hurts. And I put it in a little bit later because I was debating on who to put in the slip. But it doesn't surprise me. It doesn't baffle me. But at the same time, it does about how many bad bettors there are.
Right. And this is just highlighting it because isn't it just taking a slip and making it? It's like a slip that's already out, right? That randomly gets selected? Or do you get the chance to make the slip once?
No, you can make the slip. So you have to put in slips, and right. Prize Picks has a RNG, a random number generator, and whatever. So say you place the 517th entry today, and the number's 517. You win the chance to win a million. And then you have an hour.
I thought it was that number that got selected that slip became. Okay. No. Okay.
So then you have an entry for a chance to win $1 million. So pretty much a $40,000 six leg flex play. And you have an hour to make the slip after PrizePicks contacts you and puts it in your account. So that you do have an hour or you lose it. Imagine being that guy who won.
I saw that.
And then you don't respond. I'd kill myself.
I think I would too. I think that that's pretty justified, honestly. That's, but, dude, oh my God. Imagine fumbling that big of a bag. How could you ever live that down?
Because even then, like, you could still, if you get 4 out of 6, you win 16 grand. If you get 5 of 6, you win 80 grand. So even like losing, you could still win good, potentially life changing money. To some people, like 80 grand for me would be life changing at this point.
Dog, I'd take like, 16.
Yeah,
I'd take 16 in a heartbeat.
Yeah, 16 grand would be like yeah, I'm lit. But
dude, isn't that the isn't one hit for 16?
Two hit for 16. Two have hit for 16, and the rest have lost. So nobody's gotten more than 5 right. And just going back to what I said, it's just so many people just don't know how to bet correctly. And there are so many bad bettors and just people that just don't understand, especially on pick'em sites like PrizePicks, Underdog, and some other sites about how to bet. Like, I will say you don't have to be like the complete EV nerds that I see on Twitter and only making slips based off EV. Like, you can win and make slips off projections, especially if you pay for good projections. 100% you can win based off following information and news and getting in, you know, slips before they're bumped and whatnot, etc. You can win that way. I try to play players that are favored to go over on the side that I'm taking. I do that because I don't want to be on the side that Vegas thinks isn't going to happen. But goddamn, these people are putting fucking +115s, +120s in these 6 leg entries. They're putting fucking $1 million on the line and you're betting on LeBron James dunks. What are we doing here? Like, I get it, it's LeBron. He's probably gonna hit, but the dunks, like, it's just variance. Like, that's more variance than anything else. Like, if he dunks or not. And there's been some egregious plays. So like in this last one, you have Trey Turner to score a run. Why are you putting a baseball player to score a run on a bad team? Okay, I know Trey Turner. I know you don't know baseball like that. Trey Turner is a very good player. But why are you doing that? You know, $1 million on the line. Why are you taking fucking PJ Tucker? Of all players, this man can't score. But that was like the only one that hit in that entry. The entry went like 1 in 5 and PJ Tucker rebounds was the only one to hit. But just what are we doing here? And it's just like you're getting blessed with this fucking chance at life-changing money. And you're making just terrible decisions. And honestly, that's how 99% of people bet. Like, we're in the minority.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I would guess that most of these people don't even know if the side that they're on is juiced to what. Yeah. Like, I bet that probably, I mean, well over 50%, but it's probably like 75%+ have no idea. And they're just making things based off like their thoughts and opinions, which, I mean, Jesus Christ, like, could you burn money quicker?
Like, obviously, we have leans about players.
Of course.
Especially with football. Like,
yeah,
we're in tune. We know players' opportunity. We're in tune with the injuries and players, you know, potentially getting, you know, higher roles, lower roles, et cetera. And we can make decisions based on that and get in good lines, even if they're not juiced, right? Like, if we're in on CeeDee Lamb, and we know that Gallup is a high chance to be out that week, and some of the other guys are out too. If we get it in at -110 at 75.5, but he gets bumped to 80.5,
yeah, like, right.
Like that's a good play, even though he was -110 to begin with. And obviously, that's just an arbitrary example, but just a lot of people just aren't doing that, right? And I mean, it just goes to show. People also think that the $20 protected play is better than the boost to payout.
I was just, so that's all you have to say. Are you surprised, like, when the vast majority of Prize Picks users would rather have a singular $20 protected play over unlimited payout boosts on a Flex Friday, dude? What?
Like, I get it. I get the point of view where most of the user base is 18 to 21 year old dudes, probably in school or probably working minimum wage jobs. They don't have a ton of money. I mean, shit, I don't even have a lot of money, but I could still understand that a boosted payout and getting paid more for when you hit is better than getting $20 back on one entry. Because like you said, it's unlimited entries. So the more entries you place, the more expected value you're supposed to have, especially if you're getting it in good, which, I mean, we already have today. Mm-hmm. And people just don't understand that. And I've been arguing with people on Twitter today about it. It's been pretty funny, but I don't take them serious because they obviously don't know anything, but it is funny.
You expose yourself so hard when you are on the side of the $20 flex. Like that's just a huge, like, look at me. I'm a clown.
Yeah. But that is 95% of the user base. They just don't understand math. They don't understand, you know, the concept of like, what do you win when you win? Mm-hmm. And getting better payouts is more beneficial than getting your money back. Because like the protected entry, like you're crying about it because you think you're going to lose at the end of the day. Like you're putting your slip in thinking like, all right, I'm going to lose this, where it's like, you should probably just be getting in the max amount of volume as you can. And then you'll get rewarded when one hits. But what do I know?
That's apparently such a good way to phrase that. Like if you are on the side of a protected play, you're going in with the expectation of loss.
Yeah, which
that's the only way it benefits you.
Yeah, which I mean, you as a bettor, like you understand you're gonna lose. You're not gonna win every bet. You're probably gonna, especially if you're doing parlays, for sure, you're going to lose more than you win, right? But it's just the psychology of going into it and being like, all right, I'm already gonna lose this. I'm burning this $20, but it's okay because I'll get it back. Instead of, all right, maybe if I take this $20, I break it up into $4 or $5 plays. I hit one of the $5 plays. I'm making more money than I would instead. So. I don't know.
If you're sweating a $20 loss, you probably shouldn't have that money on Prize Picks to begin with.
Yeah. I mean, that's the biggest thing on a serious note is don't gamble with money you can't afford to lose. And if you're sweating $20 that hard, you probably shouldn't be gambling. And it's okay to take a break. I took a month long plus break, and I'm only still putting in a few slips a day, you know, $10 bets, $20 bets here and there. So it's okay to take a break, but ultimately just if you're betting, just make sure you're getting in a good and make sure you're being profitable. And I mean, we have a record now of us being profitable and it only get better in NFL. So if you're still listening, it's only going to be up from here. Cause we're going to get this nice break after hockey and basketball's over. It's going to be done in June. I'm not betting on baseball. That shit is a fucking donation. And then NFL will be here in September, and we'll probably talk about NFL prop bets on Prize Picks. They got season long entries up, so
can't wait. Can't wait for it. Good pod, dude. Good pod. Hit on a lot of on some good information, some bullshit, all sorts of stuff. What a great episode.
I mean, you got to. You know,
absolutely.
It's off season, kind of in a down like part of the off season right now, right before the draft. We're all just sitting here waiting for what's gonna happen. You gotta mix it up. You gotta talk some draft. You gotta talk some dating. You gotta talk some prize picks and trying to make people better bettors. So
exactly. Couldn't have said it better myself. And that is going to be it for this off-season update. If you are interested in connecting with us on a deeper level, you can follow us on Twitter at Dose Media Net, as well as our personal Twitters. I'm at Ben Hover. Joey's at Joey Carrion DFS. If you'd like to join our inner circle, do so. Please join the Discord. It is free to join. You can find the link in the show notes to this podcast. And to everybody listening out there, we appreciate you. We value you. Until next time, let's stay accountable and keep it authentic.